Hello everybody, it's Thursday 29th of September and you're listening to Podcast on Fire 96, the leading show in the Podcast on Fire network. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland, and joining me tonight, he's the head writer of SoGoodReviews.com, the voice behind SleazyKVideo.com, and This Week in Sleaze, Kenneth Broson.
Hello.
And he's the head writer of EasternFilmFans.co.uk and an all-round generous bastard, Phil Gillen.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Yes. So, Podcast on Fire, you can find us at podcastonfire.com. Catch up with our members-only section, podcastonfire.com/forum. Hit us up on the Facebook, that social network. Yes, Podcast on Fire. That's not it. Too much iron brew. Hit us up on the social network, Facebook, facebook.com/POF network. And you may as well twat us a well with one of the tweets and twitterns over at twitter.com/podcastonfire. Exhale. Seriously, cocaine works.
Yes, kids, remember that. Hey, but is it just me, or every time I'm on the show, it's either bongs or some kind of drugs? I don't know, but, you know, maybe you just go back to Iron Brew.
I'm literally holding a 2-litre bottle of the new, my friend. Oh, what's left of a 2-litre bottle?
Fucking podcast on fire, Tarn.
A big large between his legs, excellent. And we've not even got into films yet, it's amazing. I love it.
So, Ken, whilst I replenish my iron intake, you handle the network updates?
Sure thing. I'm just going to mention really briefly, aside from my main site, SoGoodReviews.com, I'm also on SleazyKVideo.com and being a big twat on Twitter, which is therefore twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. And for everyone's reference, the last time Phil was on, well, it was, yeah, on the Stoner episode, 89. Bong back.
Excellent. Yes, fond memories.
My memory is rather hazy, to be honest. I had a laugh because I had heartburn afterwards, so I must have laughed. But yeah, I was a bit curious before we go on to the network updates. EasternFilmFans.co.uk. What's going on and how's it going, Phil?
It's going really well, thank you very much. News is coming thick and fast, like I say. We're a newish site, aren't we, compared to everybody else out there. I guess, you know, just started this year, but, you know, I've already done like kind of 5 interviews this year, you know, Conan Lee, Benny Chan. Hopefully I've got another one lined up before the end of the year, another exclusive. So I'm getting some good feedback, some good input, and, you know, I'm really, really enjoying it. You know, it's something I really love, and the people seem to love, you know, Eastern Film Fans as well. So, you know, that's what it's all about. So, again, you know, I've got my site there, EasternFilmFans.co.uk. I'm on Facebook, and I'm also tweeting as well, so you can find me in all of those places.
I really like, by the way, sorry Stu, because I'm very old and going senile quickly. I like your little section, the bottom line, is it? The short news, the bite-sized news?
Asian news, the bottom line. Just because, you know, you get tidbits of information, you know, over the course of weeks, etc. And, you know, it probably doesn't justify a post in itself. And, yeah, you could use Facebook to update it. But, you know, what about the people on the site that want to hear about that? So, instead of trying to drag all those, you know, into some kind of glorified article, let me just bang those, you know, bits of gossip, rumours, you know, anything that is, just bang it down. And, you know, just the other week I had somebody tap me up and say, look, you know, we've got this film coming out called, you know, Knockout, and, you know, potentially we've got, you know, Cynthia Rothrock and Jean-Claude Van Damme reading for it. Do you want to post about it? And I was like, yeah, tell me more. Do you know? And they came to me and said, you know, this can be an exclusive. So, you know, it's great. It's stuff like that. You know, people will come to me now and say, you know, what about this? We've got this film or that film. And, you know, I'm always interested in it, especially homegrown products and, you know, in the UK, you know, films that want to be promoted and Iron Monk and things like that. I'm all for that. So, you know, it's great just to promote those and get those messages out there to the fans that there's these other films and, you know, homegrown, you know, British films out there as well that, you know, want to make a name for themselves. And so, you know, I'm there for the gossip and the rumours and Asian news, the bottom line. That's what it's all about.
Excellent. You were saying before, Stuart, before I interrupted you.
No, I'm just actually, like, sucking his cock as well by saying how fucking thoroughly impressed I am with, like, the interviews he's catching. Like, Conan Lee.
Mr. Hutchinson himself.
Mm.
Well, yeah.
Like, he has been, like, notorious for, like, say, no to interviews.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, when you revealed the fact that, like, you did, you built that up like a motherfucker. You were like, we've got this coming, we're not going to tell you who. And I was like, did I do an interview with him? Did I? Like, a little Alzheimer's kicked in. I was like, did... Like, oh, I'm anchored.
Shit, was it during the Stoner episode? I don't remember.
Like, I'm going to be misquoted again. Ah.
Bomb back.
But yeah, definitely fucking keep up the good work. And again, with the Facebook page, like, you're delivering all the trailers I can't be arsed looking for right to, like, my Facebook page. Like, nice. I just need to click to play. I don't even need to go looking for, like, the latest Donnie Yen's, like, 3D masterpiece.
Speaking of Donnie Yen, did you post that his early 90s UK appearance, or
yeah,
did someone
find it
where you actually sort of is in the background drooling? Or
I'm in it, yeah, I'm actually in it, yeah. I'll big up Tony Coates here from Facebook, one of the fans, and he does these magnificent videos. One of them is actually on my website now for Jean-Claude Van Damme and music videos. Anyway, he posted the Donnie Yen UK tour from 1991. Which I didn't have, and I'm actually in it. So if you flick through it at 9.15, you can see me on the left-hand side in the background. I'm the tall, gangly one, 20 years of age, looking, oh, yeah, great, and then I kind of walk away from the camera. So, yeah, I'm in that. I was actually at that seminar with Bay Logan and Donnie Yen. So, I mean, that was a great find for me. It was, that brought back a lot of memories. And
early,
I've got one
early
somewhere.
90s as well, which wasn't akin to Donnie Yen being big in the UK. Giant Fat didn't come over until, I think, 93, 94.
Yeah, so
I mean, that was the big guy. It's cool that they got Donnie over for, albeit a, let's say, small appearance, not a huge, you know, arena appearance or anything, but that still early 90s, that's a long time ago for and early appearance.
Yeah, absolutely. 20 years ago, I mean, he's probably, you know, literally kind of unknown, not as, you know, the megastar that he is now, but, you know, for here anyway, you know.
Let's welcome the star of Mismatched Couples, everybody.
That's it. Yeah,
everybody. Hello?
Mismatched Couples, Drunk in Tai Chi, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Those were the films that, you know, everybody knew him by. You know, Tiger Cage had just come out, so, I mean, those are kind of awesome, but, you know, that nobody knew him at that time and stuff, and there was, you know, you got a lot of bad rep and bad press. He was like this and that, and, you know, I met the guy, and he was a thoroughly nice bloke. You know, he answered all the questions. He didn't come off big-headed or anything. You know, he sat there. He was great. I mean, it was a magnificent experience. You know, and that's why I'm a big fan of Donnie Yen, with or without his shirt on or off. To be honest, I think, you know, he's great, a great ambassador. Asian cinema, so yeah, great.
An ageless motherfucker as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely ageless, so. And I shouldn't really, you know, Donnie has that rep, as you said, nowadays, but I shouldn't really say anything because I watched so little of his output from the last 6-7 years, so I'm not sure if he's, you know, actually doing consistent good work or if Ip Man is his...
Dragon Tiger Gate, son!
Well, I'm saying I'm not sure. I'm just, should I trust you then? Okay, I'll trust you. Everything is consistent and great. I did say Love on the Rocks, but I bet you lot didn't.
Of course I did.
He had his shirt off in the first scene he was in.
Yeah, no.
He was bitch-whipping Lewis Koo with a belt.
Yes, exactly. I like that. That appealed to me. But yeah, so I'll probably catch up on his work soon enough. I have huge respect for his old work, Drunken Tai Chi, Mismatched Couples. You know, just I'm betting it's kind of an exhilarating experience to see him being, a great physical, you know, especially in real life as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, so you see it on screen, and you know the whole thing, the Tiger Cage stuff when he has that the fight scene, and he, you know, does that little bit of boxing, and he's showing off, and he's got this, you know, cocky attitude and stuff. And I mean, he's not like in real life at all. It's just the persona on screen and stuff, and I think some people get, you know, confused between the two. But you know, he's you know, like I say, he's a great man for me. And unless you meet these people, you just don't know. But you know, I'd be honoured to do that, and I was grateful for the opportunity from obviously Bay Lady, and they've got a few of us out there. So yeah,
right. Alrighty, Podcast on Fire network updates, and it's rehashed info in a way, but for new listeners, we'll run through the many plans we have, and when they will be recorded, we don't know. But I'm going to mention some stuff that's on the site that's worth checking out. The Commentary on Fire section has been mighty active during this summer, and will be mighty active in around about 2 weeks from now. We did a No Research King of Comedy commentary, Stephen Chow movie, the little boy penis movie. We did a thorough commentary on that. Despite no research, I thought that turned out rather well. Have you extinguished all your memories from that experience, too? We commented on a penis movie. I want to remember.
I've definitely not looked at it since, but... I think I went fine, but... I just have like that insane thought. It's like, I think I just babbled through it. Like,
no, it's good. It's good.
Worse example could actually be the next one, the most recent commentary.
Well, tell us about that then.
The so-called dubbed Scotsman on Fire, the Seventh Curse. Yes, me and three other fellow Scotsmen, like the Bear Pack, so we're known as. It's taken so many different ways, if depending on your listening audience. But yes, we watched definitely a new research, because half the fuckers didn't know what the hell they were watching. Seventh Curse with Chow Yun-Fat and Shin Soo-ho. Me and three of my closest friends, we all have very different levels of Asian cinema knowledge. To one that kind of knew Chow Yun-Fat and Shin Soo-ho. The other one that probably like seen a couple Chow Yun-Fat American movies, and to the last guy who thought it was a Jackie Chan film. And
not a Jackie Chan film.
And it did, like, we got a laugh out of it. The audio might be quite terrible because it was recorded on the laptop speaker. Like, everyone just sat around this laptop. Like, we did have like a dozen headphones plugged into the little fucker, and it just sounded terrible. So we did just shouted at the laptop for a few hours at like 10:30 at night. After it met, Mike did fall asleep towards the end of the film. So it does, it actually just channels down to three people, two of which you could only hear. But the proof is in the pudding. Seriously, look us up on the YouTube channel, because the whole thing's on there.
Well, I actually need a YouTube edition, because now I'm faced with a plethora of thick accents, drunken accents, so I need to watch that commentary with video, and you can all do that on the YouTube channel that is linked in the show post for the Seventh Curse commentary, aka, I guess, the Kentucky Fried Curse at the end, and I have not seen the commentary up until that point where they start referencing Kentucky Fried Chicken, or ordering Kentucky Fried Chicken. I don't know what's going on. it'll be fun. A commentary that perhaps wasn't as fun but turned out really well and was researched was the This Week in Sleaze commentary via crossover that we'll publish in about 2 weeks, that featured me, King Hu, and Stu's reactions to Red to Kill, one of the notorious Category 3 movies, Red to Kill. And do you remember anything from that, Stu?
Just lots of shattered dreams.
Raping of the mentally challenged, researched commentary. That's what we're doing here.
Was it a case of, like, Stu's innocence was lost?
I don't know. It seemed fine during the show. I don't know what's happened like in the weeks after. I mean, he's bought two cats, so I think that's the sign of, oh my god, we corrupted him.
I need something nice and fluffy instead.
Mm-hmm. I've gone to cat two, not cat three yet.
Very good. That's,
oh,
that's,
you're yeah. Mark. That's why you're the master of the Podcast on Fire Network. And that wasn't even set up. Righto. So some other plans for the network. We're still doing Japan on Fire, the Studio Ghibli season. My Neighbor's the Yamada special to be recorded. So just a brief question to you, Stu. Any thoughts on the movie we're going to pick after, or you're going to pick after we're done with My Neighbors the Yamadas?
I don't know. I'd like to go for something drastic. Mm-hmm. And I think your main choice for that might be... Oh, no, I was going to say The Graveyard of Fireflies, but I think both that and My Neighbor the Yamadas are both Aizo Takahata movies.
Yes.
And what I was thinking is we should maybe tackle one of the each directors, because we obviously have Hayao Miyazaki, Aizo Takahata, but then we also have the new directors of Genki Miyazaki, and there's
The son of
The son, and the other one is we covered him in an episode, but the name's not in front of me. He was a dude that basically started as a storyboard cleaner on things Princess Mononoke, and he's now got to the point where he's directed his own films. I think he directed the Ponyo, and he's directed the Borrower's Ariety.
Right.
Or that might be.
I think Miyazaki is listed as director on Ponyo, but maybe it was a co-director.
Right.
But I do know he's. It's maybe a shared thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that, because that makes the series not predictable. You know, it's not that people are expecting us to do Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle and Ponyo, you know, in a row. So. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally on board for that, and I've not seen anything out of the other directors. I've only seen Miyazaki films myself, and not many at that. But that'll be fun. What's Korean cinema number four? Memories of Murder. We're organizing participants and scheduling, which always takes quite a bit of time. Actually, researching it doesn't take that much time. Organizing participants across the globe, that takes time. So. Maybe we'll actually have the entire crew that's been active on the What's Korean Cinema series, on at the same time. Rufus, Martin Cleary, and Paul Quinn. But we'll see what happens. It's going to be fun revisiting Memories of Murder. And it's a good chance for me to pick up the Blu-ray from somewhere. I know there's a good HD transfer out there of it. So because I don't own it. I've seen it as a rental, but I don't own the movie yet. So that'll be fun. And... An excellent movie that I've forgotten everything about, which is strange. It didn't last with me. It didn't stick with me. It was that good. Strange that happens. A few notes on This Week in Sleaze. So we're still planning the This Week in Sleaze double bill. It's just a matter of scheduling it with King Who, where we'll do two reviews of two favorites that are sort of unconnected. Johnny Wang's Escape from Brothel, featuring the nude fight between Billy Chow and Sophia Crawford. I actually remembered wrong. He actually has his pants on, so it's not even, he's not even fighting butt naked, but she is. Oh, she is. And we're also doing Jamie Look's Robot Tricks, and Billy Chow's a bad guy in both, so that's a reason to watch those, and that's a mighty fine connection. So we'll be talking of Amy Yip again. We'll be talking of Billy Chow when he tears it up. And we'll add some notes on the late Pauline Chan as well. The gorgeous Pauline Chan. And we haven't researched it yet, but we do plan to do it. After that, we'll do a sort of a mix of the double bill and a regular show when we start to tackle the Rape by an Angel series. And therefore, we're doing Rape by an Angel 1 and 2, which will bring in new notes on... in the show, because we obviously talked about Ching Miao, but we haven't talked about Andrew Lau or Mark Chen or Afanachu or Francis M, who's in the second one. So that'll be good fun. And if Stu wants to join to discuss that movie, because I think you've seen the first Rape by an Angel, yeah?
Hiro Masayona Bonamiyashi. That's the guy that directed Borrower Ariety.
There we go. That was easy and rolled off the tongue.
I think I slurred the last half of the name, but that's fine. What were you saying, Ken? Sorry.
It sounded classy, man. So don't sell yourself short, man. You should just said, I just came up with it myself. This is how you pronounce it perfectly. But we're also doing the... look at us. We have so much plans, but that's how I roll. That's how I like to roll. The War God Roundtable Discussion, Taiwan Kaiju, which is not a subject familiar to many people, and this movie, War God, is not familiar to many people. We're going to change that. And IFD on Fire. Not many people are familiar with IFD, or Richard Harrison, or Godfrey Ho, or the Ninjas. They just think they are, because there is so much misinformation on the net about Godfrey Ho especially. So me and Mike Lead are going to change that big time and go through the various stages of IFD, including their kickboxing and superhero movies that they did after the Ninjas. The Catman movies, the US Catman movies. And finally, the new announcement. We're going to try anyway to bring back Vampire Season in as close to as or as on the nose as possible in regards to Halloween. We did the original episode on Halloween 2010, and on Halloween we'll be tackling some of the shit, Mr. Vampire, and some of the great spin-offs. Mr. Vampire 1992, Vampire versus Vampire, not shit. And also, I think we're going to do a bonus review for the members only of Magic Corp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, excellent.
So, it's going to be a nice Halloween this year as well. So, hopefully we'll get to do that based on our current schedules here in life. But it's suitable to debut that on Halloween. And it's not a hard show to do because the info has already been done and discussed. And we'll just launch right into discussing some of our a beloved genre. Even though one of the movies is really, really, really shit and boring. But anyway, that's what's going on. So lead us into the next part of the show, Master Stu.
Last movies we watched! Is that good enough?
That's a great jingle.
That was great. That was awesome.
and now you're going to do the next jingle, because last movies watched for you means... Backlist update.
Yeah.
We're a radio station now. Let's play that.
Yeah, let's play the jingles. In fact, let's stop talking all together. Just play jingles all the way through. It'd be great.
Stu's talking shit.
Ken is long-winded. I'm going to play a jingle so I could actually research my band list and find out how much I've done.
Well, since the last show, have you had a chance to do any or 10 or 5? What's been going on since you last talked about the band list?
I have watched some. Let's see, I'll get the list up, but I've not updated the page, but I have watched some of the movies. The one coming off the top of my head right now is indeed Better Tomorrow 3.
Ah, sweet. Underrated. Yes. Underrated. Many people hate it. I find it underrated. Hugely underrated.
Mm-hmm. And I did watch it probably a good month back, but it kind of not merges, but like for people that like your maybe closest comparison is maybe a little bit of a bullet in the head, like if you go for the setting, because. Is it not like the full title or stuff along the lines of like The Fall of Saigon?
I think it's something about... I've actually forgotten it right now, but keep talking and I'll interrupt akin to the director name that you shouted out a few minutes ago, so go ahead.
So, yeah, it's been a while. That was like the second time of me really watching that movie compared to like the half a dozen times I've both like tackled the Better Tomorrow 1 and 2.
Love and Death in Saigon, that was it.
So yes, and it's still a good film. I always have to mention like the one most like badass Chow Yun-fat moment better be chilling fat. Aye, is when he's
have
driving.
Have you actually forgotten that he was in it? Was that it?
No. I was really thinking, like, who was driving the motorcycle? And it's like Chow Yun-Fat driving the motorcycle, sliding off it as it goes underneath the tank, shoots it, and it all goes up in flames. Yeah. Well, it might not be a tank, it might be a truck, but it's just like one smooth action. It's like, ah, oh, that's just too badass. Really gets those badass moments for Chow Yun-Fat, and like that was him earning his fucking keep.
And it's not really a John Woo movie. Action is great, but you know, it's different in feel. It's Choi Hawk directing, but it's different in feel. I really, really like it. I think it has, Chow Yun-Fat is as great as ever. He has a great chemistry with Anita Moy. She sings a great theme song for the movie. Played over the ending credits and in the middle of the movie. Tony Leung-Gaffa is really great, and you have the great Sekin playing Tony Leung-Gaffa's father, and I think it's a really, really epic, rousing film, because there's a great score to this as well. The Lower Low score is fantastic, and I only have great memories of this because it was one of the like first three Hong Kong movies I watched out of my Made in Hong Kong UK VHS purchases. You know, I taped a few movies off TV. This was, I think, maybe the first purchased movie I ever watched, A Better Tomorrow 3, yeah, Made in Hong Kong VHS, and I still have so much fond memories from it. But a lot of people do not like the movie, which is a shame.
I think it's any chance to see Chow Yun-Fat doing gunplay is always welcome.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you want to see. Ironically enough, I've just ordered the Joy Styles version, all three of them, and this, because I've got the first two in various different formats, but the third one I never got hold of, so I've ordered that. So I've got that one coming soon to me, along with Donnie Yen's latest one. So I'm looking forward to watching the Better Tomorrow kind of trilogy and stuff, and it, like I say, that always just that sticks out, because obviously set with, you know, in the Vietnam War kind of time and stuff, and it was just different from the first bit. But like you say, you just want to see Chow Yun-Fat with guns in hand blazing away. You know, every time a new movie comes out with Chow Yun-Fat, you're going, is it heroic bloodshed? You know, is it going to be, you know, let the bullets fly, kind of like sounded like it was going to be, and thank God somebody told me it wasn't, because I would have gone into that film going, great, you know, I can't wait. It was a different kind of movie, and it was still a great movie, but, you know.
It's some badass moments, you know, he has dual machine guns, for fuck's sake.
Yeah,
in the
exactly.
And I think Choi Hawk has a really good, he has a great eye, Choi Hawk, obviously, but I think some of the moments, especially towards the end, are actually mind-blowingly cool, to me anyway, but they are not John Woo. To me, anyway, it's a distinctly not John Woo, and I think people were disappointed without quite knowing it.
I was pretty disappointed with, like, Confucius. I was really expecting him to be, like, rolling out the temple, blasting, like, dual pistols.
Well, that's your ignorance.
Yeah, I never expected that from Confucius.
Confucius too!
Rolling out the temple with pistols would be good. Confucius not say that at all.
It's like, don't even think about opening up that fortune cookie. Nah, okay, I'll file that one.
For the future, Stuart, for the future. You can do a YouTube mashup, maybe, of, you know, Confucius and...
just read up trailers.
Yeah, exactly.
Bitch, you know who I am!
He was a burned-out cop. Confucius.
And for some reason, Stuart thinks he's like a middle-aged black woman when dubbing trailers. But... oh, get away from it, Stuart. Don't add it anymore. No, turn down heat. Yes, another movie I did watch, actually just yesterday, was Spirited Away. Like, the Studio Ghibli Oscar Award winner, and it's still such a fucking great film. Like, I just love that movie. That was, like, my introduction to Studio Ghibli. Like, the music by Joe Hayasashi is just breathtaking, and it is just such a lovable story, and a unique story. It's none of this, like, Disney cookie-cutter shit. It's just this fresh, different take, like a foreign culture, like the cultural bathhouses and just this
weird fucking monsters as well.
Exactly, like radish spirits. Like it is just magical. It is like almost like a cartoon form of things like Never Ending Story, and it is like pure fantasy. And it's unashamedly, it's just like fascinating, beautiful, heart wrenching, like a mind. Like, I was watching it yesterday just to see if the same bits choked me up. And that I think I've finally gotten used to the movie. Like, but seeing it on like a big screen in Edinburgh a few, like maybe 4-5 years ago, like it's still, I was choked up watching that film. It's such a fucking classic.
And they've never really, no one, as far as I know, have tried to rip it off or imitate it, because you just don't imitate it very easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's that fantastical. It's that the imagination is so fantastic that you don't see imitations follow in their wake, in Studio Ghibli's wake.
Because it is like all those crazy little oddball ideas you had in your head, or all those imaginary cartoon characters you would draw on your school jotter. It's like all these different things that, like, in the corners of your imagination were all just like thrown on screen. It's like, how the hell could like someone come up with this? Mind-boggling. It is like fucking genius. So, yeah, there. I think it has actually only been two films since we've last talked.
Well, you had your holiday movie marathon last time we spoke of this, I believe. So, you know, it's not expected of you every week to be as active as you were during your holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're back into your 9-to-5 structure, so no wonder.
Mm-hmm. So, and outside of the ban list, I've watched 13 Assassins, like Takeshi Miike's, like this should be quoted as like Kevin Smith the now has the movie poster, an unlikely movie from that Kevin Smith. This should really be quoted as an unlikely movie from Takeshi Miike. Because it's a fucking straight-edge samurai film. Like, there's no, like, any weird fucking pussy farts in a tense, serious moment. Like, it doesn't do that. There's no fucking snake creeping
out
of your vagina. It's just fucking stone-cold serious. And it's fucking awesome. Like, it could go along the lines of the Seven Samurai, but with fucking six more, but it is. It's an awesome tale of so many characters you'll never remember.
Oh.
Like, there is 13 assassins. I could remember 4 of them. There's, like, the 2 old guys, the teacher, and the kid. Oh, and the monkey guy.
Like, the only way you could remember that is if he actually included such traits as the samurai who pussy farts and the samurai who has snakes coming out of his vagina. His vagina, her vagina. Knowing Takeshi Miike, it would be his vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone else's.
So, like, the movie easily stays away from any messed upness. It is, like, just, it's not his style at all, but I think he's just done it to prove a point that he can throw out a fucking awesome samurai film. Like, it's the story of one young, ruthless guy that's in power. Like, he's been granted, like, immunity by the state. Like, so, like, he's going around killing and raping families. And, of course, he's, like, of this, like, royalty. So, like, people can't touch him. And it comes to the point where, like, 13 assassins basically join together to go on a suicide mission to take out him and, like, his army of 200 men. And I feel sorry for the fucking little village that they decide to take over and fight in. But that's it.
It's really talked about, this movie.
It's doing huge. Like, the later half of the movie, like, along the lines of, like, bodyguards and assassins, like, your first hour's all talking, the second hour's all action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking awesome. It's just, like, some samurai films could be fucking awesome. And could I fit in another fucking awesome?
Well, apparently it deserves it. Apparently it deserves it. It's that it's kind of big, and getting a UK release, releases, I guess, on DVD and Blu-ray and stuff like that.
It is indeed. It's been released by, I think it was Entertainment One, on DVD and Blu-ray. Blu-ray is sitting at a reasonable $12.99. I've not dived into the special features yet, but it's a fucking class act of a film. Definitely worth a rental. Or, like, if you really want to take a proper stab at it, not a pun, by the way, only $8.99 on DVD. But seriously, like, love film is your friend in these cases. So try before you buy. That could be the closest thing, but it is a fucking damn good film.
And you're not really into the Takashi Miike weirdness as such. It doesn't appeal to you, yeah?
Or... No. I think I started off at first saying, "Oh man, this guy's weird and unique." Like watching like The Happiness of the Katakuris and Ichi the Killer, Audition, like all those kind of like boggle the mind and says, "Like fucking Japan's crazy," and like obviously, but when it came to seeing things like Full Metal Yakuza or Fodo the Next Generation, is like, this is too fucking weird for me. Mm. Like, I think there was a transgender sex scene between a schoolgirl and a teacher.
Right on.
And I was like, wait, what? Eh?
Give it to Ken.
So... yeah, this was in, like, when Arts Magic were releasing anything with Takeshi Miike's name on it, and I just kept getting these through the door, and I was like, these films are getting worse! Watching, like, the Young Thug movies, and I was like, did he make these on the weekend? Why has this guy got a broom shoved up his ass? And the man is on all fours screaming because, like, 3/4 of this fucking brush has went up his ring piece. Oh! Yeah. Like,
it will put people off because of the director. You think, oh, what's this going to be like? But he plays it straight as you can do. I mean, obviously the snapshot of him in there with the, you know, the sadisticness of the main villain, the laughter, and you know, he puts it in your face right there at the beginning and stuff, and you think, oh god, you know, he is a complete bastard. I can't wait until, you know, he gets his comeuppance. But I mean, the film is awesome. We reviewed it for Eastern Film Fans, and it's 40, the last 45 minutes of Sloths and the Dolphin, it just purely is action all the way to the end, and it's just it's a magnificent film, and for people to speak of it in the same thing as the, you know, the Seven Samurai, which is, you know, the ultimate film, it's a great honour, and if that's how good the film is to be discussed in those kind of circles, it's awesome, recommended very, very highly.
Mm-hmm. It's like really everything you actually want out of a samurai movie. Like, you do just want crazy, intense, just mass murders. It's like you're playing the Dynasty Warrior video games where you're just a single character fighting an army of hundreds, just bashing buttons, killing everyone with a single strike. Like, this is just like the visual vision of it, and it's just blood spilled, buildings explosion, animals set on fire.
Wow. Fake, I hope.
Yeah, I think, like, a fucking herd of CGI cattle come out of nowhere.
All right. But having hearing you talk about this, I sense that you would like movies like Lone Wolf and Cub or The Shogun Assassinated of those two movies, so, with the fountains of blood and just all-out action, samurai action. But maybe that's not your style?
Never gotten around to them. I've always seen like every like blockbuster I walked into, there's always like a couple copies of Lone Wolf and Cub just lying there. And I just fear that I'd just be crap.
Like, well, I would recommend the Shogun Assassin version, because it takes the first two movies, cuts out a lot of the story and focuses a lot on action. That's what I've heard. So, and it's dubbed in it has a good dub on it, so you know, if you can find that cheap Shogun Assassin, that's probably going to be a short, good time with lots of fountains of blood. Not disturbing blood, just fountains of blood. That's fun.
But really, that is all I've been catching up with. I have received copies of the Thai action movie Brave, which is some random release made from the Ong Bak team. Not got high hopes, but why not? Also got Ninja Girl.
From Japan, we assume.
Yes. Yay, 65 minutes of goodness.
65? That's clever thinking. You know, if you only have one concept, you know, Ninja Girl, not Ninja Girl versus giant samurai wielding squid. You know, you should cut it down to 69 minutes.
So, yes, I think they know the movies they're making is, like, they know what they're making. So I don't think they try and take the piss by saying, fuck it, we've went 5 minutes longer than Seven Samurai. Just to prove a point. Seriously, take us seriously. Look, HD, Blu-ray. We filmed it on, like, a VHS camera, but still, Blu-ray.
Blue. It has a blue stripe. Therefore, it's blue.
This fake tinted blue case, come on. An extra fiver. But, yes, so I've got that. And yes, the best news of the day was getting an email finding out that there's going to be a UK release of City Under Siege. Isn't that the Aaron Kwok mutant film?
Yes. It'll be titled Assassin's City.
Exactly. They butched it up. They added the word assassin to the title.
So, what before or after? So, City Under Siege, Assassin? Or...
No, it's Assassin, no. City Under Siege.
Assassin, City Under Siege.
They're total shying away from, like, the bloated corpse of Aaron Kwok that you see in the still shots. It's just, like, a dark shadow figure covered in tribal tattoos with, like, a light shining behind him. And it was, like, from the visionary director of Who Am I? It's like,
that's going back.
It is. It's like, have you ignored half the other DVDs? He's just been released by this guy. But I'm pretty sure this isn't a CineAsia deal. So, but I've asked for it. It sounds so weird. It's a fucking Hong Kong superhero movie where circus guys get superpowers by breathing in gas.
It's certainly noticeable when you speak of it that way. I've not had the urge really to watch it. Then again, as I said before, I've not watched a lot of the output from the last 2, 3, 4 years anyway from Hong Kong. So, I like Aaron. I really like Aaron. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what he does. Cowboy outfit, golf pants, or clown shoes. or a thong over his head. I'll watch Aaron do anything.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reason that I'm like just laughing about this now because I am under the impression that this movie did turn out to be pretty much a joke. Like, Aaron Kwok has got away with some good acting chops recently, but like I think this is pretty supposedly a quite embarrassing film. Like future ex-cop embarrassing.
I've heard it's but it's not totally boring though. I heard Future X Cops is actually terrible on all levels, including entertainment level, for the sake of watching something bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
Andy Lau had to pay his mortgage, really.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. well, I've heard Andy will do anything for Wong Jing, really, because Wong Jing helped him get gigs back in the day. So good on him.
So we're not going to see the fucking Andy Lau Wong Jing photos go online. Seriously, do you want to be in this movie? Zip. So, yes, I've insulted everyone's ears for long enough. Ken, last movie watched?
Yeah, I got a quick one here before we turn over to Phil. I've talked about the Sea Eagle box for a number of times now, the Shaw Brothers box from, is it Singapore, Malaysia? Regardless, it's shit. It's absolutely shit. Where they stored it, like 1,500 Shaw Brothers movies in one box, and they all look like shit. It's not DVD quality. It looks absolutely shit. But there were a few movies in there that have not seen releases on VCD or DVD or even outside of Hong Kong, and I got those through means, let's say.
Means!
Those means, kind of means.
The mean.
The mean.
Magic.
Means. Magic. Harry Potter magic bitch.
Fucking magic.
Because you need to get your Johnny Wang fix. And therefore, I watched This Man is Dangerous. Johnny Wang's first directed movie for Shaw Brothers. It was done in 1985 when Shaw Brothers were officially doing productions on their very last year before they shut the doors, and only afterwards occasionally that did productions. And you know, Johnny Wang was a screen baddie for many years. He's in Five Venoms, but I remember him from Marshall Club, where he has a brilliant fight scene in an alley with Gordon Liu as Wong Fei-hung, directed by Lau Garlong. It's absolutely brilliant, and Johnny Wang is a fan favorite also for his directed work. And but this movie is really obscure compared to his other movie in 1985, which is Hong Kong Godfather. And both showed a director who wanted really brutal animalistic violence on screen. This was his kind of pet theme, I guess. And you could see it in later movies as well. He did Angry Ranger with some Jackie Chan style stunt team action, hard action. And he also did Escape from Brothel, which I talked about. Really nasty film. Johnny Wang liked being nasty to people, and I like that. Brutal animalistic violence. That's what we get in Hong Kong Godfather, partly in This Man is Dangerous. Because it's really reference material only when the man himself, Johnny Wang, appears. He plays this mainland gang leader, and Chin Siu Ho's and actor Cheng Chin Pang's duo of newly appointed cops usually mucking up out of ignorance is a bit of a chore to sit through. It's a sort of a buddy cop comedy, and they're so idiotic, these characters. Absolutely idiotic. Just letting their mouths run off way too much and spending way too much much on wine at an undercover operation at a gay disco, which features, by the way, Elvis Choi in makeup playing the marijuana king, which is fun because Elvis it's fun seeing Elvis in these kind of movies because you don't recognize him instantly, makeup or not, because he looks a hell of a lot more slimmer and obviously doesn't have his trademark mustache. But Elvis grew in, you know, in size, really, playing, you know, vicious bad guys later on. And so the first half is a chore to sit through, but eventually, like, really, really, really great darkness enters the movie, and it's way more engaging. This Man is Dangerous. And it starts with a plot point in the middle of the film where there's a theft of police guns, and the mainland gangs obviously are behind this, and they use this on anyone who gets in their way, and obviously that creates, you know, drama for the police. They have to get their guns back. And Johnny Wang heads this gang, and he's a, you know, when I say brutal sadistic force, you have to add about times 100 to that, because he's incredible in this movie. You know, this is how a baddie should be on screen. Absolutely crazy, brutal and sadistic. And he's directed it as well, and I think a lot of this comes from him. Either he exercised, you know, demons in a way on film. Because if you see his five or six movies, this is the theme, really brutal violence. And it all ends on several really shocking pieces of violence on, you know, innocents, main characters. And nothing is ever fair in Johnny Wang's frame. And it's true for Hong Kong Godfather in a way that has this classic knife machete ending where they pretty much drained the last batch of Shaw Brothers blood because it's so bloody, Hong Kong Godfather. And it's fun to watch these two movies. This Man is Dangerous, it started something, and it would continue in the movies I mentioned up until Escape from Brothel. So I recommend it, even though one half is really bad and the other half is great. And Long Gaian is in it, Philip Coe is in it, so you got some good cast as well.
Once again, I've got just DVD and film stack to watch, and unfortunately, a certain Gears of War 3 came out recently, so I can't spend the time on that. But the last movie we watched was actually Space Battleship Yamato, which I did the review for the website last week, which is slightly a different kind of movie to what I usually review on site and stuff, but you know, these kind of the quirky movies I like to, and especially people are interested in, so this one's obviously set are based around, obviously, the Japanese anime series, which has been going for 30-odd years, and there was a lot of noise around it. I thought, you know, I've got to watch it, basically set in the year 2199, I think, when the Earth has kind of been ravaged by war. And Sumusu, who's played by Takuya Kimura, is salvaging what he can on the Earth's surface when a lot of the capsule crashes not far from him, knocking his helmet off, but proving that this capsule can like, eradicate the radiation around him. So now the Yamato, the space battleship, comes to pick him up and find out what the capsule's about, and it explains that there's this new warp drive and this way to this planet and stuff, so they find this kind of message hidden in there. So they send out for volunteers to remain the last spaceship, Yamato, to set a course for the planet. And so the journey begins with the last hope of humanity being sent off into the far reaches of space. I've just lifted that directly from my review, because it's my review, and it's great. But it's a great little movie. It's a big movie. It's a big blockbuster movie. It's a big sci-fi movie, which I always enjoy. And you know, it was a real thrill to watch it. Like, you know, a big Japanese sci-fi epic. And like I say, the series has been going for that long and stuff. It was great to see them. You know, not that I've seen anime series, but you know, from the feedback the fans were giving, you know, it was close to the series. The film was great. So that was the last movie that I've seen and stuff. I've got loads more just queued up. I think the next one I'm going to try and creep in as soon as I can is old Anthony Wong in Punished, the Johnny Toe produced the kidnapped thriller, so I'm looking forward to that one. So that'll be next.
Co-starring Charlie Cho. Keep an eye out for Hong Kong cinema's number one perv, Charlie Cho.
Number one perv, yeah, I will too. I'll bear that in mind. So I'm really looking forward to that one. So yeah.
Looking older and not playing, you know, we joked about it on This Week in Sleaze that he probably brought with him to the set, to Johnny Toe, his inflatable sex doll, and they said, my God, man, this is not that kind of movie. Oh.
Enough is enough.
Because normally Charlie gets no direction. You know, just turn up and be Charlie, but Punished should be different.
When we said it was a movie called Punished, we didn't quite mean it that way, yeah. I'm looking forward to that one. I've been a bit lax in my viewing, so Space Battleship Yamato, highly recommended for anybody who likes the Japanese cinema. So that's one from me.
Has that reached the UK yet in on UK on DVD and Blu-ray and stuff like that, or?
Not. That's a good question. Has it? I don't think it has as yet. I did say, and I don't think it has, and we know the reason it hasn't, because I actually finally finished the review with the line. Obviously, it's grab yourself a slice of this, Eddie. You may find that Space Battleship Yamato is out of this world. And a little bitty underneath, I thought, DVD distributors, please feel free to grab the last line. You know what I mean? Anything you got on the front cover. Just blatant publicity. But it is, out of this world. So, no, I don't think it's been picked up yet, but I'm sure it's coming soon. Let's check and find out.
Phil Gillen as heard on the Bong Back episode of Podcast on Fire. That's what they're going to add to that quote as well.
Yeah. It's going to be a full title.
The Stoner Podcaster. No, that's not what I wrote.
No, not the Stoner Podcaster.
So anyway, do we have a jingle for listener questions, Stuart?
Nah, my throat's getting a bit hoarse now.
I thought you were getting enthusiastic, like, I get to sing now.
Sugar levels have hit a low, man.
Oh, what a shame. Well, we haven't had a listener question for a long time, but I've been saving this, and I only regret that I've actually lost the name of the person who sent this in. So please, my sincerest apologies. It's a great question, but I've actually lost the name. But maybe if you listen to the show, you can get back to me and...
Listener questions! Hey, I found it.
you found inspiration. That's great. You're on fire. On Podcast on Fire. Jingle on Fire.
Sorry about that. Continue, Ken. I'll stop being a dick.
No, you need to balance. You know, we need to have a dick. We need to have a stoic, serious, boring one. That's me. And we have to have a feel on the show, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and of course. Thanks.
To balance it out. Anyway, this is the question. Any thoughts on Alex Mann? Actor Alex Mann. I'll continue to read the question from this listener, what his thought is. So, quote, "For me, he was the epitome of the Hong Kong badass in the 80s and 90s. He was this deliciously nasty in Killer's Nocturne, directed by the Seven Curse director, by the way, and a right bastard in Tragic Hero in Rich and Famous. And he was also quite good in Hong Kong 1941. And for me, Mann is interesting because he has this on-screen dichotomy, I guess. With his work on TV, he always played the righteous lead, and in movies he played the villains most of the time. For me, that only shows he can do both equally as well. So any Alex Mann movies you can recommend," he also asks. So before I do my notes, do you guys have any spontaneous thoughts on Alex Mann? So what about you, Stuart? So what about you, Phil?
Yeah, you just think about that too. And obviously, I was Rich and Famous and Tragic Hero. Obviously, a couple of my favourite movies. I'll need to revisit those. But you know, Alex Mann was there in those, and they are great, great movies. But the other one that stands out is As Tears Go By, because Andy Lau. I'm a great Andy Lau fan, and Alex Mann obviously is in that to get. Jackie Chung, I think it is, because he's...
he's a mean bad guy, yeah.
Maggie Chung, yeah, he's a real bad guy in that and stuff, and obviously that's Wong Kar-wai's, I think it was directional debut, could be wrong, but I think it was, kind of the 80s triad, you know, and that one really sticks out for me. I mean, that's a must to watch if you're into your Alex Mann, and like I say, it's a great cast with Jackie Chung and Andy Lau again, so Maggie Chung. I mean, you know, it's probably not one of the greatest films, but it is a great triad, typical of that era, you know, 80s kind of melodrama kind of thing. So that's the one that sticks out in my mind, along with, like I said, Rich and Famous and Tragic Hero. So.
And it also has the trait of Wong Kar-wai repeating songs about 5,000 times in his movies, because this one has the Canto version of Take My Breath Away, which is apt for the time, you know, from Top Gun and all of that.
Yeah,
and that will continue in Chungking Express, you know, him hammering home a point. And I'm saying that in the, you know, in that way, because I don't like the usage of music in certain Wong Kar-wai movies. You know, over and over. But anyway, I do like As Tears Go By.
Skies are gray. Na, 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 na. I don't know the words.
So do you remember any music from Alex Mann movies, Stuart?
Well, the closest it really gets to Alex Mann for me is his appearance in Young and Dangerous 4, 5 and Born to Be King.
Playing how many characters?
He is playing the brother of Simon Yam, which is still the one character, Mr. Chiang. But it's good. Yeah, he's fine. Failed out by that time. But, it's the same as we mentioned before, the Rich and Famous, Tragic Hero, and, of course, Hong Kong 1941. That's
one of the odd releases from Hong Kong Legends, you know, straight war drama, really.
Mm-hmm. And fucking glad they done it, because it probably would never be looked at otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, and he's great. He's absolutely great in that. It's a great trio, gathered up with Chiang Fat and Cecilia Yip and himself. And you should almost mention Stuart Ong as the Japanese villain in that one. So it's just a great movie. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Sorry, man. Most recently, I think he's also been tagged as one of the characters in Bruce Lee, My Brother, aka Young Bruce Lee.
I actually don't remember him from that, so I probably noticed when I saw it, but I've actually forgotten, oddly enough. But and it's a shame, because I always like when you see actors that you haven't seen for a long time in Hong Kong cinema, in particular, pop up in new big movies.
Mm-hmm.
but it's unfortunately, like, I don't remember him.
But that seems to be his last most recent, well, work. But you're saying he's also like a TV actor as well, so he's probably more active on the television than on the big screen, we think.
Yeah, you can always assume that. I actually don't know, and I haven't seen much of his TV work, yeah, only his movie work. Yeah, but what always pops up in my head when thinking of Alex Mann is his raspy voice, his albeit the post-dubbed voice. He always had a wonderfully raspy voice, you know, playing villains. Or growling voice, even, you should say. And it really went hand-in-hand with him being able to chew scenery well. And Rich and Famous, and in particular Tragic Hero, they actually are connected movies. One is the sequel, Tragic Hero, although it was released first because it had more action. So it was released first. But he's a fucking mean motherfucker in Tragic Hero. You know, he has a grudge against Chow Yun-Fat, who brought him up in the gangster organization. And whoa, what a grudge. What a grudge. And part of a great grenade launcher finale with Fandy Lau and Chow Yun-Fat. And wow.
I can't remember anything about that movie because I was rottenly hungover when I first watched it. That was like a Sunday afternoon that was lost to Jack Daniels. I know I've watched it, but I didn't as well at the same time, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, it was very red.
Well, it's a great hangover movie, to be honest. I mean, it isn't deep at all. So, you know, Chow Yun-Fat.
Like, man, this dude's mean. When's dinner?
Chow Yun-Fat.
Oh, there's chocolate! Oh, do us a card trick. Oh, wrong film. Fuck.
Can't reach it. I want the other film.
I want the bouncy 80s fun. Why are people dying? This is so tragic. They need a hero.
But you know what? He is a great actor. Shut up.
Just going to mute myself.
Because there's other movies to mention, really. He started out in Shaw Brothers. Actually, well, not started out, I think it is in movies before, but he was part of Shaw Brothers' stable of actors for a number of years. Really wasn't a great fit for him, but he's in some great classic movies, like Buddha's Palm, the wonderful, you know, Energy Bolt movie, if you will. He's great in that, and he's in this erotic drama called An Amorous Woman of Tang Dynasty, which is really good, classic drama. But and when I watched him in dramas, I never really took away much of anything aside from, you know, the likes of Hong Kong 94-1, great performance. I liked his one of the few comedies I've seen him in was another Shaw Brothers comedy called Let's Have a Baby, where he's actually totally batshit crazy, which is fun to see, you know, the mean Alex Mann just ham it up like crazy. And I really liked Let's Have a Baby. But the movies I wanted to mention, aside from the ones that were mentioned, like Killer's Nocturne and Rich and Famous, you know, he was a comfort presence. We always talk about that, and I think Alex Mann is part of being a comfort presence in 80s and 90s Hong Kong movies. It's really fun to see Alex Mann in movies like Last Duel, Fight to Survive, Devil Hunters, which has no hunt for devils. By the way, it's just a regular modern-day action movie. The one that Moon Lee was quite seriously burnt on during the finale fire stunt. That's from Devil Hunters. And he's in King of Gambler, which is his great, part gambling movie, part shootout movie. Has a really good shootout at the end. And even Category 3 dramas like Hong Kong Gigolo, where he's sort of the gigolo that doesn't get as much work compared to Simon Yam's gigolo, so there you go. but yeah, what we one of the great movies that people need to watch ASAP is Stanley Kwan's Rouge, where he's way different. He looks completely dorky, completely ordinary, and he plays this, he works for a newspaper that Anita Moy's ghost contacts for an ad in the paper. She's looking for Leslie Cheung's character because she's not reincarnated with him, and thus that ad starts this atmospheric, haunting, and heartbreaking ghost romance. Not between him and Anita Moy, but Anita Moy's relationship kind of is reflected in Alex Mann's and Emily Chu's relationship in Rouge. And everybody should watch that movie. It's absolutely beautiful. And finally, a movie I discovered this year or last year, because it was was released on Joy Sales VCD, was this movie called Flirting, which is quite a steamy erotic drama before the Category 3 rating was a thing. And to quote myself and see if I can get on some release of Flirting, I think that has less of a chance compared to your attempt, Phil, to get.
I think your ship has sailed, Ken.
Yeah, but I've got a quote anyway myself because I like myself and my quotes. So there. It provides more than its share of flesh, disgusting gore, and disgusting characters. And that's actually a praise to the movie. I really like it. Unfortunately, only on VCD, but a good print and all that. So so all's good. I don't think they're going to do a DVD of Flirting anytime soon, because the DVDs from Joy Sales and the Legendary Collection seems to have halted by now. And finally, I want to quote someone who wrote in some feedback about Alex Mann. I asked on Facebook, and Albert Faray, if you pronounce his name that way, writes the following: a very versatile actor, capable of playing both ruthless villainous and kind-hearted heroes roles. Due to his versatility and his strong presence, I've always seen him like some kind of Simon Yam. And it's a pity that he didn't survive the decline of Hong Kong cinema at the end of the 90s, because he didn't appear in as many movies, despite being a young and dangerous. It's still at the tail end of his feature movie career, kind of. As a badass, I like him in Edge of Darkness, As Tears Go By, Fatal Passion, and Killer's Nocturne. My favorite movies of him on the opposite role are The Last Duel and Fight to Survive. His fight with Xing Feiyun is just brutal. And many of his actions are good too, especially Devil Hunters, Framed, Set Me Free, and King of Gamblers. So that's Albert's feedback on Alex Mann.
Bacon! Yeah, make Ken watch a film.
I'm keeping that. That's ace. Make him fuck. I dropped it.
Make Ken watch a film, by the way. But
that's the best jingle we've had. I wasn't doing it, but that was a great intro. I like that one. You keep it there.
I feel made to watch a film, but I like it. I like it. It tends to be Japanese cinema, but then again, it's a chance for me to actually watch Japanese cinema, which I normally don't do as much. Not these kind of genres anyway. I did Pale Flower as the first segment, and on Facebook, Jen Ko suggested Boy. English title Boy, directed by Oshima Nagisa from 1969, and it recounts the true story, one that briefly shocked Japan in 1966, of a married couple who trained their 10-year-old child to fake being hit by cars so they could collect damages from the shaken drivers. Yipes.
Is that not that gay Jim Carrey film?
I don't know, I haven't seen it.
No, okay.
Maybe a remake of Boy, what do I know?
There was a film he'd done with Ewan McGregor, I Love You, Philip Morris, and it did start off, the first half of his story was just basically claiming money for injuries, like throwing himself down escalators and falling over and shit. And then he basically found out he was being fraud, like just fucking ripping people off, and got thrown in prison. Huh. And got raped. Credits.
It's not in this movie. That would be Takashi Miike territory, I guess, if the little boy was raped. But anyway.
Snake came out his ass.
Yeah, I guess. But this one, it's pretty slow and static. But it's actually a rewarding dark drama that is about, among other things, about how misbehavior, missteps, an unfair hand of cards in your life is like passed on through people, through generations. It's very unfair, this. And it's also a movie that has no familiar structure, so it presents that challenge of, you have to sit down, absorb and try and interpret each and every imagery. It's pretty clearly told, though, and you try to make out what it is and how it's possibly related to a hole and hope for a reward by the end of the 97 minutes or so. And that, thankfully, in my eyes, happens. And so, you know, such imagery that you're trying to figure out what it actually is about in the overall scheme of things is initially seeing Boy, which that's his name. It's not, no one is named. It's, you know, Boy, brother, mother, father. So it's like that. And you see him by himself, playing by himself at the end. You see him play by himself during the beginning of the movie, and it looks like he's either simulating crying, you know, training crying while watching Traffic. So you, knowing the plot, you like think to yourself, wow, he's really deep into this, or what is it? Really, you don't really know until the end, really. And we also get the, again, from this time in Japanese cinema, like this jazz ambient type of jarring score akin to Pale Flower, and even the movie we talked about two episodes ago, the horror movie Jigoku. And it makes you really uneasy, but it makes sense to have an uneasy score because the events on screen definitely does make you feel uneasy, especially since it's real life as well. As you see the family plan their fake dangerous acts with their children, it was absolutely horrifying, really. And there is an explanation to all of this, having to do with the father being a war veteran and being sort of on a, like a downward spiral after the war, and possibly Japanese society at this time in the 60s wasn't in the best health economically. I don't know too much about that. So you think to yourself, maybe that's a really desperate act based on the times. And but it's, you know, what I see in the film is that this choice, you know, desperate or not, tends to contaminate the young ones, as, you know, you put illegal events in their lives and sort of plant a tragedy as well. All this is not very clearly, you know, said to the viewer. That this is just my interpretation of the film. And when you watch the father and mother, you plan these acts with the children, it seems to be only mild sinister behavior, and you know, they're just going through the motions, really. They're not the evil people, they're just doing it. And you know, the father is, you know, the dominant force in the family, a forceful father to be sure, but you know, and you also start to think to yourself that Boy may have been taken from his home forcefully. The scenes we never see, really, but you get info dropped every now and again in the movie that you know, the father says that, you know, your grandmother doesn't want you anymore and your school doesn't miss you anymore. And you know, wow, you know, talk about corrupting the young, just and setting him on a path, really. And it's innocence crushed, and children not allowed to grow up normally or be children, really. And you know, the picture here is that being painted for us is that there's no other options. That's really sad. And for Boy, who is like 12 years old, and his brother, like 3 or 4 years old, not even that, they do seem doomed. But there are some wonderful scenes of them talking to each other, between each other, about sci-fi movie heroes from space, and you know, their fantasy is still, you know, thriving in a way. And they talk about the you know, aliens from Andromeda and what have you, and I'm sure that's like that's a reference to some famous movie monster or monster movie at the time. I seem to remember some Godzilla movies having alien villains from that very galaxy. So but then again, you see a boy is being, you know, I've hinted that he's desensitized, and he's being desensitized by all of these fake accidents, and he's both like in on the planning, and also as well, he doesn't quite understand or know fully what he's doing. That's also kind of a tragedy of the movie. But you can flip it also. At the same time, he also matures and finds a streak of responsibility, and you know, the feeling of doing right and protect those around him, in particular his brother. But he also seems to want to protect his father from the police and what have you. So it's that mix of him being on a good path but mostly on a kind of a bad path, not fully aware of exactly what all of this is doing to him. But the movie also later on brings in that he kind of rebels against the authority in his life, and I'm sure this is a deeper subtext about Japanese society, I don't know, as well. But he finally understands something isn't morally right, and he wants to enjoy other things in his life, like buying a hat, you know, a yellow hat, to enjoy having a watch with, you know, cool features like watches had at that time.
Mm-hmm. Like, you all know, the simple things as a child.
Yeah, exactly. And and despite all of this being fairly slow and static, it's not like a very stylish film. It is rather compelling, straight drama, you know, coherent drama, not art house abstract shit like Wong Kar Wai. And it turns, you know, increasingly heartbreaking as the movie goes on, and mean, because you realize early and increasing during the movie, like, this path is really, really terrible, and the young is on this path, and the scam gets increasingly desperate because they're spotted, the parents, they're photographed, so they can't keep, you know, they can't keep in the same area for forever, and they can't go see the same doctors forever, and the doctors even, you know, find out, looking at the boy, that you have old bruises and wounds. Did you get these, you know, during this accident? Yes. You know, so the scam starts falling apart, and they even, like, are kind of forced to go to the harsh, snowy parts in north of Japan, I guess, to work undetected. And the positive here is actually boy gets to see Japan, you know, large parts of Japan, which he likes, but, you know, it's all still dealing with, you know, characters becoming lost and the scam being quite desperate. And, you know, maybe a key event in the latter stage of the film will save him, but rather that key event, I won't describe where it is, will save him eventually in adulthood, you know. There's no feelings or positives overall here. But it's not tough to watch. It's just straight. It's not dark and depressing and sad, you know. As a movie, you just watch and realize it is kind of dark, so it's not manipulating your emotions. I do really like it. It's engaging. The widescreen frame is very well used. Some action even takes place on the outer edges of the scope frame, so therefore you really need scope for this movie, otherwise you wouldn't see anything but a center frame where nothing is going on, because everyone is out, you know, on the edges of the frame, which is kind of, you know, an argument for widescreen. And as a final note, something I didn't really like was the use of colored filters in scenes, which clearly represents, you know, the director trying to make a statement or you know, hammer home a mood. And it really didn't work. Aside from having a blue filter in the really snowy scenes towards the end of the movie, you know, blue snow kind of worked. So I do like it. I was surprised. I thought I was going to get about 0% of it, because it seemed to hint that, you know, deeper that you had to know a bit more about Japanese society at the time. But it really comes through. I do recommend it. And as in terms of availability, I'm not sure there's an official English subtitle DVD or not. I got a torrent based on either the French print on DVD or the Japanese print on DVD. There are some good fan-subbed editions out there of Boy. So I thank you, Jenko, for the recommendation. Mm-hmm. It was good.
We need to fucking recommend you a romantic comedy or something, dude. You must be listening so depressing.
Well, I had Sword. You know what? I have Sword.
Many films. You need to see, like, a fucking Charlie and Joy romantic comedy, man.
If I haven't seen it already, yeah, so feel free to suggest. But you know what? The next one I have in line is also Japanese, but it's one by a director I fucking love, Hideo Gosha. I think it's Sword of Doom I have lined up, which is supposed to be a really good samurai movie. I've seen a movie by Hideo Gosha called Hitokiri or Tenshu, which is fucking amazing. So I'm looking forward to the next Make Ken Watch a Film based on that. Yeah. So
I'm totally needing to throw you one, like, right now. You should really watch, like, 27 Dresses starring Kathy Heigl and James Marsden.
Again, Asian movies, man. Have you forgotten already?
I'm sure it came out in Asia. Eventually.
Yeah, you're tweaking the rules and I don't like it.
Okay, what about Never Been Kissed? The Notebook.
Last sounds song. Like a remake of Asian Moves. Go ahead, suggest a Charlie Choi movie that I haven't seen. I haven't seen the Ekin Cheng movie that he did with her. What was that called again? Where he was Robin?
Women from Mars.
Women from Mars? Well, consider it then.
Ekin Cheng, Michael Wong.
Yeah. Yeah.
See? That's a...
Yeah.
That's like your lube.
Consider
that's
it
your safe entry.
Lube. You regret saying lube, right?
Well, there's lots of birdie
lube,
talk,
you
so.
Say? Consider it done. Women from Mars. I've added it. And if you want to suggest movies to me, you can use my Facebook, obviously. You can put it on my Twitter, twitter.com/review. So good reviews. But also my Formspring, which is formspring.me/so good reviews. And I'll if I haven't seen it, then it's more Asian than the other movies that Stu mentioned.
I don't know how she does it. Nah. Sarah Jessica Parker. okay. Sorry, Ken. Continue.
You're kind of not getting the rules of this segment. It's very easy, Stu. You were getting it for like a minute when you were talking about Charlie Choi, and I don't know what's with you.
A barrage of tweets.
It's Max like a
27
dropping...
dresses. 27 dresses.
You can't talk about it.
Is that...
You're just looking at the rental pile right now.
What women want? Yeah.
But what was that movie Ekin Cheng did with Charlie Choi?
Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, what the fuck?
Sorry.
I'm setting you up for like Ekin Cheng's scholar knowledge, man.
He's done lots of films with Charlene Choi.
Really?
There's My Wife is 18.
That's right. I have seen that. Too. No dice.
There's the fucking Black Rose movie.
That's it. That was the one I was hinting at. It fits with Donnie Yen kind of theme here, because which Yen is in that movie?
Mm-hmm. Chris.
What's that
which
mean?
Happened to be a girl.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I would have preferred making you watch Tangled, but okay.
Can't have everything you like to it.
I don't know.
But so, consider Women from Mars done.
Okay.
So.
Alright, we'll try and get you around to watching X-Men First Class eventually. Or Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2.
That sounds good.
Right, see, you're just going to start agreeing with me, is it? This will shut him up. Sure, yes, of course. Yes, I'll watch Hangover 2. Yes. Spartacus, consider it done. Harry Potter, bring it on. Okay, I'm going to close Amazon now.
Make Ken watch a film on fire. I guess that's a new show. Make Ken watch any film. He'll do it. He's a whore for attention. On fire.
So, plug in. Yeah. We've gotten that far, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay. I've killed energy tonight. So, let's put a bow on this one. Get her done. Anyone to plug?
Nothing new in particular, or just our regular stuff, so run through the list again.
podcastonfire.com, podcastonfire.com/forum for the members only content. You could catch us on the social network, which is facebook.com/POF network. Twat us over at twitter.com/podcastonfire, just at podcastonfire. Drop us a message, make Ken watch film, make sure to shut the fuck up. That's it.
Exhale.
Ken, go.
Exhale. I thought you were going to say mine as well and literally kill yourself on air.
I'm tagging you in, man. I'm...
Righto. You want some ninjas, you want some Taiwan movies, you want some Category 3 movies. I'll read all about that on SoGoodReviews.com. And all of that content can be in the same movie sometime, depending on what crazy shit I find. Also, all of that crazy shit is video review, that's sleazyk.com. And I'll also do talks of random stuff on Twitter sometimes. So it's twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. It's Ninja Talk. It's been Bullet in the Head Talk. It's just been, I guess, shit talk as well. Most of the time. So that's pretty much it. Sound good. Phil G, if people have forgotten your web space, what's going on there? Plug away.
EastonFilmFans.co.uk. Look out for some more reviews coming soon. As mentioned, Punished with Anthony Wong, Johnny To produced one. Ruji, obviously the Donnie Yen one's coming around soon as well, so I'm looking forward to that one. I've got an exclusive, hopefully, interview coming up soon, so I should get another one in before the end of the year, so I'll just tease you with that now, but we'll wait and see. But I would like to say, I did forget something earlier, another classic Alex Mann film is Crocodile Hunters, and I'm going to leave you on this little note, because he does play a cop with Andy Lau in it, and I do recall it, and I'd forgotten all about it earlier, but Alex Mann is running around naked towards the end of the movie, and he comes out with the classic line, "Ha-ha, I've got a gun at last. I'm still naked, though. Let me cover up." And then he puts a bag over his head. Classic. I mean, hey, that's just, you know, you've got to watch the film after that, Crocodile Hunters. Absolutely perfect.
I actually thought I'd watched that, but I confused it with another movie, just title-wise. I confused it with a movie called Criminal Hunter, which he's not in. But I needed to recheck that. Fuck, have I seen that? Because I like the title, obviously. But, you know, it was Criminal Hunter, and it was Eric Tsang and Danny Lee, I think.
So,
no dice.
Thank you very much, guys. For having me back again, I enjoyed it tremendously.
Yeah, this time it was cocaine, apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, what drugs are we going to do next time?
Acid, you know, let's just do the lot.
Mm-hmm. So, are we going to, should we actually finish this on a high note?
Which high note?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's do the outro. So I've been host. Wait, no, I've gone. Yeah. No, sorry, that was a cat attack. Yes.
Was that Ari or
Jesse?
The, fuck you?
The Body Ventura. Yes, it's Ari Gold versus Jesse the Body Ventura right now. They're ready. But anyway, I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sullen. Joining me tonight, we've had the voice of SleazyKVideo.com, Kenneth Bruce, on, and the main man at EasternFilmFans.co.uk, Phil Gillen. I am your host again, Stuart Sullen. I'm getting higher. The voice is going up. It's episode 96 of Podcast on Your Fire. I'm your host, and good night.